Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. I'm your host, Noah Rubin, and for episode 68, we are continuing our Dynasty Outlook series, and today we are going to be talking about shooting guards with the host of the Quadruple Double podcast, that is David Williams. I'll bring him in here in a few minutes, and let's go ahead and get into it, though. As I said, this is continuing the series. We're going to go through five episodes just talking about each of the positions. If you weren't able to yet, definitely check out the episode we did on point guards. That was with Hudson. You can find him on Twitter at UpsideNBA. But for now, I'm going to go ahead and bring in David because we're going to talk about some shooting guards with David Williams. You can find him on Twitter at NBADWill21. You can also find the Quadruple Double podcast through his Twitter. And I believe there's also a separate account for that podcast, if I'm not mistaken. But David, can you give us a little bit about your podcast? And also just thanks for being here.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you having me, man. The podcast is not NBA related at all. It is it's an OVC basketball podcast. So it's a niche thing. I have been fortunate enough to do some color commentary for the University of Tennessee at Martin. And so the last few seasons, I've been kind of courtside watching a lot of OVC basketball. And there's just nothing out there. There's very limited. You don't see any of the big, you know, ESPN, NBC. Nobody really has somebody that specifically covers that conference. And the basketball is high quality. You know, Ja Morant, obviously, I'm a Grizzlies fan. He came from the OVC. Robert Covington is another guy. He played at Tennessee State. He's another OVC player. The OVC player of the year, Riley Minix, was playing in the summer league for the Spurs and had a pretty good showing. I don't know that it will land him a contract, but there's a lot of talent, and I just wanted to do something. I'm around it. I'm going to watch it quite a bit because I'm doing the color commentary, and it just gave me an outlet to discuss it. So that's why I dove into it, kind of fell in love with kind of both sides of the, like, men and women's. The UT Martin women have really dominated the OVC for an extended period. They've kind of had a little bit of lean time, but they've got a really strong core. And I think for at least the next 2 years, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And yeah, just love of basketball, man. I'm a degenerate. I can talk about basketball any time of the year, any day. Like we can discuss whatever. So it gives me a platform for that.
Well, that's what we're here for. We are the Dynasty Sickos. Like you mentioned, it's just the OVC. Like the people that listen to this podcast are the people that are going to say, oh, I need to listen to this podcast now to try and see if maybe there's a prospect or two that I can hear a little bit about so I can get them in the, you know, the 60th pick in my rookie draft in 2 years after a nice summer league or maybe even off the waiver wire. So, you know, we love the niche basketball, like the in-depth stuff where you're going to get good content that not everybody else is doing. So that's awesome. Anybody that's listening to this, definitely be sure to check that out. But today we're going to be talking about NBA shooting guards and just kind of going through four categories of kind of dividing them up. Obviously not going to get to talk about every single shooting guard in the NBA. So just because we didn't talk about your favorite player or your favorite dynasty sleeper or something else, like, they still have value. We just can't talk about everybody. We don't have the time for that. I'm going to go ahead and bring up this slideshow just for anybody that's watching to be able to see a little bit of a background. It's not going to provide a ton, but it's a little something to look at. These pictures throughout the slides are reflective of my opinions on some of the players. Doesn't necessarily line up with David's, though I don't think there will be a ton of contention with at least this first slide. David, who do you kind of have in that top tier of dynasty shooting guards?
I mean, the two guys that you have on the slide, I think, are kind of head and shoulders above everybody else. And I didn't know for sure, you know, like we discussed it lightly about what we were going to talk about on here. So I didn't know who you would have, but I went down just a little bit further than those two.
Sure.
And Desmond Bane is a guy, I mentioned I'm a Grizzlies fan, but he finished 34 per game last year. And I don't think that he's going to compete with Ant and Mitchell. I don't think that he's got the ceiling that those guys have. But I think that he is kind of a – I'm kind of similar to Dan Bespris in the aspect that I like to play it safe. And so when I transferred over into Dynasty, I really had to stretch myself because a lot of the young guys, I love the NBA draft, so I would kind of study them for that. But when it came to fantasy stat sets, I wasn't really interested. I stayed away from the young guys. And so Desmond Bane is very an old man style pick because he's not super flashy. Like there's nothing that just blows you out of the water. He's not going to be a 30 points per game guy, but his field goal percentage is going to be good. His free throw percentage is going to be good. His turnovers were up a little bit last season, but I think with the healthy roster that you see those go down, he is going to have some ball handling responsibilities, but it's not going to be at the level that it was last year. And a lot of the things that he done or that he did, excuse me, he's going to be able to replicate those even with a healthy roster.
For sure. And I think to me, there's like a top three and Desmond Bane would probably be four for me. I believe that lines up with my dynasty rankings that I'm still working on. Who knows when they'll actually come out because I haven't done a ton in a while, but it's Anthony Edwards, yeah. Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, and then Desmond Bane to me. And so I love Desmond Bane. I think he's played incredibly well the last few years. Obviously a little bit of a boost that you mentioned last year with Ja out, but he's still going to be one of the, you mentioned safe, like an old man squad sports, shout out to them and Dan Bespris, like you said, like a guy that would fit that mold, especially even for a dynasty, I guess, take on things. Like he was an older rookie, so he's not like this young prospect that has a ton of upside still, but he's been like a third round value for like, is it three straight years now, or is it just the last two seasons? Yeah, three straight years. So so that'll play pretty well. He's only 26. If you had to, just for the few guys above with Ant, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, how would you kind of rank those three? Or would you have Desmond Bane or somebody else above one of them?
Yeah, no, I think those three, like I agree with you there. And dynasty-wise, probably Ant for me, one, and then Mitchell and Booker. And you could convince me to have the discussion of Booker over Mitchell, but I'm pretty like I would lean Mitchell there, and that's like but it's close between those two. Ant is number one for me, not by like a super wide margin, but just the age and the stuff that he's putting together. I feel like you're going to continue to see his fantasy value increase.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that ranking. I think it's Ant and then Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker. Like I've had them within a couple spots of each other for a while in my dynasty rankings. I think the one advantage that you could maybe go with a guy like Donovan Mitchell or Book over Ant would be in like a win now scenario where you need specific categories that Ant can't provide, like his field goal percentage, just looking at it quickly is a little, or I guess his field goal percentage is a tad lower than that, or it's about the same as Donovan Mitchell. It is lower than Devin Booker. If you look at per game nine cap value, Book was 16th, Donovan Mitchell was 8th, and Anthony Edwards was 37th. So he tends to, just looking at nine cap value, be a little bit lower. The free throw percentage is a little lower than the other guys. The other numbers, aside from scoring, are just kind of just a tad lower. But Anthony Edwards has the hype factor. He has the fun factor, and he is younger, so he has the upside. So that I would agree with the, if you're just general dynasty value, we're taking Ant over the other two. But you could make an argument because in redraft leagues, you'll probably see them all kind of, you know, vary with who goes first, who goes second. Just depends on who's drafting. I was finding when I was looking through shooting guards, trying to make a list for this entire thing, was that the shooting guard position kind of isn't very deep. And I think that a lot of the guys that have shooting guard eligibility aren't really considered shooting guards in a lot of, I mean, just looking at it, if you just go on Basketball Monster and divide it out, okay, here's the top shooting guards. It's one SGA, two Kawhi Leonard, just per game value. So I'm like, okay, that's a point guard and that's a small forward. So a lot of the guys on there are, that's just kind of the way things work. But is there anybody else other than the four guys we've already talked about that you think kind of deserves to be in that top tier that you would consider a shooting guard?
Man, I don't think that, I think that the three that you mentioned with Booker, Mitchell, and Edwards, and then Desmond Bain being kind of in that conversation. And after that, I just don't think a true shooting guard has the type of stat set fantasy wise that's going to put them in that tier. I think that those guys kind of separate themselves. So yeah, no, I don't really have. There are some guys that I like, but as far as valuing them and looking to make a move to get them in the dynasty setting, I'm not going to value anybody else as close or close enough to these guys that I would give up the type of package that I would to land any one of the four that we've been discussing.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think it just, you could make certain arguments for other players, but I think the argument is more is, are they a shooting guard versus a different position more so than, oh, this other shooting guard deserves to be in the same consideration. Because, for example, a guy like a DeJounte Murray who was playing shooting guard in Atlanta, the entire time he was playing shooting guard, we were like, hey, no, he's a point guard. He's just kind of there.
And that's kind of like Tyrese Maxey is another guy I feel like that you could discuss. But I think that he kind of falls into, he's not necessarily a shooting guard. I look at him as more like a point guard type player.
Yeah, no, I agree with that entirely. Just trying to scroll through and see if there's anybody else that I would consider with that. But we'll try and go a little bit more in depth just briefly with these top three guys. Is there any of the top three with being Book, Mitchell, and Anthony Edwards that you're a little bit concerned about, whether it be because of situation or something else? For example, like Devin Booker playing alongside Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant. Obviously didn't limit him a ton last year, but are there any concerns like that about situation, I guess?
No, not necessarily. I think that if you look at any of the three, Mitchell is probably in the best situation because he's the number one option. Mm-hmm. And Anthony Edwards should be the number one option in Minnesota, and we may see him being the number one option in Minnesota. But Karl Anthony Towns has been there for a while, and him kind of letting go of ego and realizing, hey, I'm not the best player on this team anymore, and letting Ant do what he needs to do. I feel like maybe we saw that a little bit last year, but I don't know that the coaching staff and Karl Anthony Towns is ready to say, hey, this is where we're at. But if you watch that team, it's clear in a way that Edwards is the best player on that team. So like Booker's situation, probably the worst of the three just because of the other weapons around him. Like you said, there was no, like he still had plenty of value. It's not like it hurt him last year. Mitchell's situation being the best because he is the clear number one option on that team. And then if Minnesota makes that shift to where Edwards is the number one option, you may see, I think you said he was 36th per game, 37th per game. Yeah. Like you may see that go up a little bit, and obviously you need to see efficiency. I think the free throw percentage with him is kind of the biggest concern for me, and it's not awful. It's just something that you would like to see better. Mitchell's free throw percentage is great. Booker's free throw percentage is great. And Edwards is just meh. So, if you see him grow in that area, which he's capable, I think, of growing in that area, but I don't know that he's going to grow enough to kind of jump there this season.
Yeah, I agree. He did bump it up to 83.6% this past season. Because in my mind, I was saying the same thing with his shooting numbers. I was like, yeah, no, his shooting's a little bit subpar. 83%, that was a career high. Still obviously lower than Book and Mitchell. But that improvement, I think, did help. It's why he had the best fantasy season of his career. It really contributed to that. I don't foresee him getting significantly better, but maybe if he's able to, then we're looking at potential like second, even first round finishes. All right. So we will move on to this because I feel like we've kind of squeezed all the juice out of these four guys, being able to talk about them. When we did the point guards episode, it was like six guys, but maybe we could add some more just because there's a lot of fun point guards. The true shooting guards, you got to look a little bit deeper. We'll talk about some underrated guys now. I'll let you go first, David. Obviously, you can see the two guys that I have is on my underrated list on the screen. but who do you have as guys that you consider underrated?
Shaedon Sharpe is one of them. Mm-hmm. And I was messaging a couple guys. We're doing that 30 team mock draft, the Dynasty mm-hmm. mock draft. And a couple of guys that are in there with me, when I took Sharp where I drafted him, they're like, oh, you could have waited on him. And I'm like, it's a 30 team draft, man. If I don't take him there, I don't know that he gets back. But just in the leagues that I'm in, I don't feel like his value is as high as it could be. And obviously, mm-hmm. like, he's had the injuries. So, like, there's questions there. But that Portland team is so young. Somebody at some point is going to have to grab it and take it over. And I feel like Sharp has the skill set to do that. Now, is that skill set going to translate into fantasy value? Not 100% sure. You look at the minutes went up last year, his efficiency dropped, but that's kind of par for the course, right? Young guards, their efficiency is typically not great starting out. And then once they figure the league out, then you start seeing those numbers creep up, and he's much better than a 40% from the field guy. So like if you see that field goal percentage go back, like his rookie season, he didn't play a whole lot. When he did, he was a little more efficient, closer to 45%. If you see a 5% jump when he's playing 30 plus minutes a game, well, then that's going to increase his value. I think that he's a guy that with the way that he can break people down off of the dribble and get to the basket, he's a guy that I could see having a significant bump in his field goal percentage. And that in and of itself, you know, if your field goal percentage is better, you're going to score more points. And if you're getting downhill the way that he's capable of, it's going to create opportunities for teammates. So not that you're ever going to see him be a big assist guy, but I think that you can see those numbers rise some as well. And, you know, defensive stats, like his are not great, but as his minutes went up, you saw those start to creep up into where they're serviceable.
Yeah, it was almost a steal per game and almost half a block per game in his first, I guess, his rookie season. He did play a decent role, but like you mentioned, the minutes went up a ton, and now we're seeing the defensive stats go up. And he's also on a young, bad defensive team, so maybe the defense improves when the team's defense improves. And he's also this incredibly athletic player that, you know, I'm sure that helps get some occasional steals and occasional blocks, just the fact that he can jump out of the gym. And he's also only 21 years old, so I think getting a guy like that, it was pick 69, just looking back at that mock, I think that's totally a fine pick, especially if you believe in Shaedon Sharpe and like you think that that's gonna, like, that totally fine pick to me. If you're looking at this past rookie draft, there's a number of players that are older than Shaedon Sharpe that went pretty early in that draft. And it's like, oh, we have this athletic freak that already has 2 years of NBA experience. Yeah, I like that. I like that a good bit. So, no, I totally agree with Shaedon Sharpe being kind of an underrated player. Who is the other guy that you have on your list?
Dalen Terry is the other guy that I have. And I think it's really been opportunity for him, because that Bulls team has really, they've been in kind of this purgatory of, are we a competitive team? Are we not? You have older, good players that theoretically you should be a competitive team, but they just have not been. And so he hasn't gotten a lot of opportunity. But if you go back to his sophomore year in college, 8 points a game, 4 assists, 5 rebounds, 1.2 steals, and he shot 50% from the field. Didn't turn the ball over a lot. There are a lot of things that he has. I don't like doing like player comparisons a whole lot, because it's really, really tough to do that. But with his skill set, I think that you could see maybe like a DeAnthony Melton light type stat set. And you know, like DeAnthony Melton is not flashy or sexy, but because he does things efficiently, it gives him fantasy value. And I don't know that Dalen Terry is going to be a guy that's going to be a 20-point per game player in the league, but you don't have to have that. Like when you're playing Dynasty, if you play in any Dynasty leagues at all, you have to play a punt build. And that's something that, you know, I feel like you have to, because it's, if you're playing in a deep Dynasty league, like a 20, 24, 30 team league, it's going to be really, really tough to have a balanced team and compete with the teams that are punting. So in my opinion, if you're playing anything bigger than, say, a 15 or 16 team dynasty league, I think you have to have a punt build.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. I was Dalen Terry's like a guy that I really liked, and then I've been like trying to slowly talk myself out of it because like the production hasn't been there. But this is going to be a really good opportunity for him this upcoming season. So I think that I need to get back in on Dalen Terry. Like, now's the time to kind of say, okay, I still think, because the talent's there. And now you mentioned the opportunity just hasn't been there because Chicago's been just shooting for mediocrity for the past 2 or 3 years. And now they're finally like, hey, we'll be a smart-ish NBA team and try and actually rebuild. And so we'll see how that goes for them. But that should mean minutes for Dalen Terry. I think they still do have a few young guys that'll have to compete with for minutes. But I don't think there'll be any sort of issue for him if he, like, at small forward. I think a lot of it actually is guards that'll be some of the young guys soaking up some minutes. But yeah, it should be a fun season to see if Dalen Terry is able to kind of figure it out a little bit after not really getting much of a chance in his first two seasons. The two guys that I have are probably two guys that if you're very invested in dynasty leagues, that you're going to say, no, those guys aren't underrated. They're just guys that we all like. But I tried to make a list because a lot of times I'll make or I'll just only talk about guys where I'm like, okay, like all the in-depth dynasty sickos are going to really like this. But you know, we can also talk about dynasty stuff that is for people that might have not been paying attention the last few months or might just be more casual players. So that's probably where both of these guys fall into that category of if you're already playing really in-depth dynasty stuff, then you probably already know about these guys. But we'll talk about Devin Vassell at first, partially just because I really like Devin Vassell. And you don't hear a ton about guys that play really well on bad teams. But last year, he averaged 19.5 points, 3.8 rebounds, 4.1 assists, 1.1 steals, 2.4 threes. He's an elite shooter. He's capable of getting defensive stats that weren't great last year, but he's capable of getting both steals and of helping you a little bit with blocks. He can create his own shot. The playmaking upside is there. I really like Devin Vassell. I think he's just going to continue to get better. And as I think that the Spurs will be more relevant as a team this year and be competing for more of a play-in spot. So I think that's going to get more national attention on Devin Vassell. Because I don't know if you remember this, but when he got his contract extension, it wasn't a full max deal, but it was a pretty sizable deal. There's a lot of people that were saying, wow, that's an overpay. And then there was a lot of people that are saying, wow, that's going to look like great value by the end of the deal. And it just kind of depends on how much attention you've been paying the last few years, which it's easy to not pay attention to the Spurs pre-Wemby or the Spurs that aren't named Wemby just because it's more fun to talk about the winning teams. That's who gets the attention. But how do you feel about Devin Vassell in dynasty leagues?
Yeah, I like him, man. I think it's the one thing for me that I really struggled with early on was determining value of players. Mm-hmm. And each owner values guys differently. So I've witnessed different trades go through that I'm like, holy crap. But also you may have like, I'm high on Dalen Terry, and you, mm-hmm. you said that you had been kind of like on the fence of being out on him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I may value Dalen Terry significantly higher than you do. And I make a trade for like, I trade one of my older guys to go and get Dalen mm-hmm. Terry that you still see it as super valuable. So I think that the important thing in dynasty, like you have to do your research, but like determining the value of the guys based off of the market matters. And Vassell is a guy, like you said, if you're in dynasty and you're locked in and you've been playing it and playing and playing it, you know his value, you know what he's mm-hmm. been doing. He's a guy that's going to go out there and he's going to be consistent. And I think those are the guys that you can just throw in your lineup in dynasty and you don't have to worry about if there's going to be production. Those are the easy one. Like I like having those guys on my roster, and there's never a doubt like Devin Vassell is a guy that I'm going to start night in and night out. And you know, I think he was probably one, like I targeted him. I tried to make trades for him a number of different times, and the guys that had him valued him very high. So I think that the underrated, I think it just depends on perspective, right? Like, you know, if you're newer, you may not value him as much, but a dynasty veteran is going to have him pretty high up the list, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the perspective thing is definitely very crucial. I think the way I was approaching the underrated category and the overrated category was, who am I higher on than general consensus? And I think that even if general consensus, especially dynasty leagues, is pretty high on Devin Vassell, I think this guy has like all-star potential, could be elite in fantasy if he continues to develop. And I think that's why I have him as underrated, because even the guys that are high on him, it's my goal in life now to be higher. Like, I'm the Devin Vassell guy. I'm gonna take that crown from anybody who thinks that they have it in the dynasty space. But I know Rhett Bauer references a pretty good set. I couldn't find it. I was trying to find it before we started, but about like difficulty of 3-point shot, where Vassell was shooting an incredibly high percentage on shots that were contested 3-pointers. So he has the shooting talent and the shot making ability of your typical superstar wing that can hit these tough shots. He just hasn't been on a good team for anybody to see it yet. So I think next year we'll turn some heads for the more casual players. And then the other guy I have is Brandon Pajemski, who, again, just like Devin Vassell, like, you're paying attention to dynasty format, dynasty leagues, and you know who Pods is, and you know that he played well in certain stretches last year, averaged 9.2 points, 5.8 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 1.2 threes. But I think for me, I already liked his talent, and now it's like, I think that this guy's probably going to start. That's kind of what it seems like is coming out of Golden State, is that he's going to start. D'Anthony Melton and Buddy Hield are going to be coming off the bench. I was a little bit worried after those signings that maybe that would prevent him from starting now that Klay Thompson's gone. But I think second-year Pods in a pretty permanent starting role alongside Steph, I think it's going to be a fun year for him in fantasy. So for both Dynasty and Redraft formats, I think now's the time to get in on Pods.
I'm not a huge fan of Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
You have like Kuminga and Moses Moody are two players that I feel like could contribute to winning, but the way that he has managed that team, I feel like that it's stunted their development, and they're both still, mm-hmm. I think, rotation players. And with Pods, I'm just scared because you mentioned those signings, but we're still hearing the rumblings that he's going to be the starter. But how much rope is he going to get? Because Kerr doesn't care about developing players at all. He wants to win. Yeah. And if Pods goes out there and he's underperforming a little bit, and you have D'Anthony Melton that's playing well, or you have Buddy Hield that's playing well, which Buddy Hield is not going to play well for very long. So I'm more concerned about D'Anthony Melton than I am Buddy Hield.
Yeah.
But I could see you being higher on him than the consensus. And if he's starting, every reason to, because opportunity mm-hmm. brings value. And in an offense like that, with guys that can move the ball like Steph and Draymond, he's going to get some open looks. So I think he could easily outperform in a redraft league, outperform where he's getting drafted. And I think the rumblings around the leagues that I'm in, like, people are head over heels, like, trying to go all in to get him right now. And I think it's warranted if he starts, but because of my fear of Steve Kerr, I don't know. I'm a little bit hesitant. I do like his skill set. I think that he does have a fantasy friendly stat set. But just hesitant because of the coaching situation.
The Steve Kerr fear is very fair, very legitimate. I do have just kind of a little bit off topic, but kind of, we've talked about D'Anthony Melton twice now, and I know you're a Memphis fan, and he was obviously in Memphis for a few years. Mm-hmm. Are you confident that he's going to have a bounce back season? I know he had pretty much, like, the reason he had a bad year last year was the back issues, but how are you feeling about D'Anthony Melton?
Yeah, if he's healthy, he's going to – his nickname in Memphis was Mr. Do Something, because when he was on the floor, that he always was able to do something. So if he is healthy, he will have a bounce-back season. That's a huge if. Back issues are very tricky. some people, you know, like Ben Simmons, how many years now has Ben Simmons been dealing with his back issue? And like, at what point do you give up on a player that has that kind of talent, but with the injury history? So I think if he is healthy, that he does have a bounce back year, but we'll see. I don't know how healthy he is right now. Now that he's not in Memphis, I'm not really keeping up with the health updates as much as I should, being a dynasty player. Like that's kind of thing matters. But I haven't really dug in to see how, you know, the rehabilitation and how his progress is going.
Yeah, no, I get that. I was just curious. I haven't done a ton of, or I haven't talked a ton about Melton this summer outside of when he signed, but I'm like, if he's healthy, he's going to be really good. And he's going to play a decent role. Like Steve Kerr, I think, will like him as a player. So I thought it was a good pickup for Golden State, but we'll move on to some of our overrated players. And for me, when my approach to whether it's fantasy or just basketball, I'm just not a hater. So when I say overrated, it's probably just guys that I'm just a little bit lower on or just not a huge fan of, but not guys I just think they suck or anything. Like, these are good basketball players. They're talented. They're in the NBA. They're fun to watch. Both the guys I have are 20 point per game scorers. Like, they're good. I'm just not as high on them, partially due to situation, partly due to their stats set not being super well-rounded. But David, we'll start with your guys. Who do you have on your overrated list?
RJ Barrett and Jaime Jasquez. I guess, like, so RJ Barrett, I feel like people have been just waiting and waiting and waiting for this superstar to break out. Coming out of Duke, you know, he was the second best player on that team, and he had a skill set that looked like it was going to translate to the NBA level and be fantasy friendly. But the efficiency has not been there. And then now the efficiency got better. He was 55% from the field whenever he went to Toronto. So he got some efficiency there. But then his defensive stats are just trash. And I know you said you're not a hater, so I'm not trying to hate on him.
If you're a RJ, hater, feel free.
Yeah, like I just I would have to go back and look. The last time that I looked for sure, he had not finished inside the top 150 in 9-cat in his career. And I don't think that he has broken that plane yet. And so in a 24, 30 team league, yeah, he's going to be valuable. Like, he's going to bring you a little bit of value if he's around the 150 to 200 mark. But you can find, like, with his name power alone, you could trade for guys that are going to finish right around the top 100. They're going to bring you more value. And so I think the wait for him to turn into the superstar, for me, it's over. I will not make, like, if he's on my roster, I'm looking to move him. And if somebody's offering him up, I'm not even discussing trying to get him, because I just don't see that he's going to bring any type of fantasy value. Now, he is a good basketball player, but you can be a good basketball player and not be a good fantasy player. And I think that's kind of where RJ Barrett is.
Yeah, I think he falls right in with the category of Tyler Hero and Jalen Green that I have up here, of guys that can score 20 points per game and just not be great in fantasy, except RJ has a thing where you mentioned the bad defensive stats. He's a bad free throw shooter. That's a lot of what tanks his value in 9-cat leagues. You mentioned his best finish was four seasons ago. Finished 173 this past season. He finished just inside the top 200, but he has three seasons outside the top 250 in 5 years in the NBA. So, yeah, his game is not built for 9-category leagues. He's pretty good. I mean, he's much better in points leagues than he is in category leagues. He's played pretty well in the Olympics so far, so I'm just kind of saying, like, hey, like, maybe we have a little bit of hope. But outside of Olympic success, which I don't think translates directly to NBA success by any means, example, Patty Mills. I'm not a huge RJ Barrett fan, especially in fantasy either.
Man, if we could not talk about Patty Mills, that'd be great, because he's a certified Grizzlies killer. Every time that dude, he turns into the FIBA version of Patty Mills whenever he plays the Grizzlies, and I'm just like, ah, it's rough.
I thought about, as I said, I was like, Patty Mills, I was like, ooh, I think he's like, I hope I don't like strike a nerve here. Like, I don't think it's, but my bad. Yeah, we won't have to mention his name anymore, I promise. But if you want to talk about Jaquez.
Yeah. So overrated may be a little bit strong. I know, like, I'm just this summer, his name has been thrown around a lot of the leagues that I'm in, and there were trade offers that were public, and it's weird. Some of the negotiations are weird in dynasty leagues.
Yeah.
But there were guys that I saw people willing to give up to trade for him. And I was like, dude, I don't know what you're seeing that I'm not. And now he did have streaks last year where he was good. So I do think that there is value there. But right now, I just think overall that people are too high on him, higher than I will ever be, because I feel like he is a good role player. And I don't know that his ceiling goes much higher than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think he was a guy that after he got drafted, I think he was underrated. And now after a really like a solid rookie season, just from a basketball perspective, now he's leaning towards the overrated side, because I think he's a guy that should be rostered in like standard nine cap leagues, like a guy that you want to probably take in the last couple of rounds, just because he's a solid player. Like, he's going to see minutes. He's going to get some stats here and there, but I don't think he has tremendous upside the way a lot of other guys in that really good rookie class did. So, yeah, he had a good rookie year, but he averaged 12 points or almost 12 points, almost 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists, a steal. Like, I'm not seeing any of that dramatically increasing. Like, I think he's a guy that, just looking at it, he finished just outside the top 150. Sure, he could approach top 100 value. I'm not seeing him significantly improving on that. So I agree with the overrated label for Jaime Jaquez.
And how much of that production happens if Tyler Hero is healthy? That's kind of, you know, sometimes we get tricked. Sometimes we see players in an expanded role that is not going to be their role, and we get some fool's gold from it. And so that's, you know, like GG Jackson, love the Grizzlies, love GG Jackson, but his value right now is just, it's through the roof. And I think that he does have all-star potential, but I don't think that you see that from him for at least a few years, just because of the way that the Grizzlies roster is constructed. I'm concerned as a fan that they're going to, you know, just kind of push him into a role that he's way better than, just because of the way that Taylor Jenkins and that coaching staff is operated. But I, you know, with the Miami thing, Jaime getting the minutes in the run, I don't think you see that production if you have a healthy Tyler Hero.
Yeah. And that can be a pretty good segue into talking about Tyler Hero being overrated. We'll just stay on the Heat and hate on the Heat some more. That's always fine with me. He was, you know, he played 42 games last year, was top 100 guy, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. Like, that's good stuff, obviously. Like, he obviously is a good scorer and has a little bit of rebounding and playmaking, will hit threes. But I think, to me, it's the lack of defensive stats. The field goal percentage isn't great. And the Heat have been trying to trade him for like 3 years. Like, obviously they don't value him the same way they would value other players that are having 25-5 seasons should be valued. So he's a good scorer. He's a good shooter. And he does a little bit here and there. Like, he's still a good fantasy option, but I used to be higher on Tyler Hero. And then talking with Rhett Bauer about it, one time, like, just been slowly dropping him down my board as, like, my opinion on him is souring a little bit. He's a solid fantasy option. I'm not seeing him being better than he already has been. I don't see him taking another step forward. And I think with the team that Miami has now, with Terry Rozier in the mix, still have Jimmy Butler, have Bam, Jaquez is still going to see minutes. I don't know how much a guy like Duncan Robinson takes away from Tyler Hero, but does Tyler Hero see a few less shots, a few less minutes? I think a lot of what's getting him the numbers is the volume, the opportunity, like 17 and a half shots per game last year that led the team. Does he see a little bit of a reduction this upcoming season or in year? And just the fact that they've been trying to trade him for superstars that are on the market that are obviously better than him, but I just don't see them valuing him as an all-star talent. So I think he's just got to be considered a little bit lower.
Yeah, I always go back to defensive stats when in Dynasty, you know, I talked about punting. I'm a little more lenient on the Dynasty level, but in a redraft league, I have a minimum. If your combined defensive stats are not here, I'm not drafting you, because in redraft, a lot of people don't pay attention to defensive stats because they're not sexy, and percentages. And so if you focus on percentages and defensive stats, that's 4 out of 9 categories. You just have to be good and 1 or 2 other ones. And then you can usually do pretty well. And that has, it's done me very well in redraft leagues. But Tyler Hero is a guy that you just don't see the defensive stats. And where, if you are projecting him to have a jump, to have a step forward when it comes to the fantasy side, where is that jump coming from? And I don't know that he has it in him for those defensive stats to just take a big jump. You know, like 0.7 steals is not awful, but it's also not great. And you just look like his efficiency, I think it is what it is. He's a career 44% from the field guy. And because of the difficulty of shots that he takes, I don't think that gets any better. I don't think you're going to see him get closer to the 50% mark. Two and a half to three threes. Maybe he goes a little bit north of that if he has a solid season, but I don't think you're going to see a big jump there. His free throw percentage has been solid his entire career. So the 20 points per game over the last 3 seasons, you're not seeing a jump there. The area where you look at it and you say, hey, like, you know, if you go the last 3 seasons, 0.7, 0.8, 0.7, and then essentially no blocks, like 0.1, 0.2, 0.1, that's where you would need to see him improve in order to drive his fantasy value up.
Yeah.
And it's just not his game. It's just not what he does, which is fine. Not everybody is going to be a defensive-minded player. You have Bam on that team. You have Jimmy Butler on that team. You have guys that are superior defenders. So you need some guys that can go out and get buckets. But for Tyler Hero on the fantasy side of it, the lack of defensive stats, that's really, you know, if you saw like his steal numbers get up to like 1-1 or 1-2, then you see him climb up the board a little bit. But he hasn't done anything in his career that would make me think that you're going to see that type of change happen.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I just don't really see it. That's why got him on the overrated list. And I think a guy that has kind of a similar stat set is Jalen Green, but just obviously just not as good, not as accomplished as what Tyler Hero has been. But Jalen Green obviously had that one stretch towards the end of last season when Houston was on a huge winning streak where he was basically the best player in fantasy basketball, or playing like the best player in the league. So it's not a lack of talent for Jalen Green. It's been a lack of consistency. He's had a stretch in pretty much, I think, in all 3 seasons that he's played where you're like, hey, like, this guy's got superstar potential. He could be one of the best shooting guards in the league. And then he has some stretches where it's like, yeah, he's getting benched because he's not playing well. He's not playing defense. So there's going to continue to be a lot of question marks around Jalen Green. And then Houston just drafted Reed Sheppard. Now, how they think Reed Sheppard is going to fit into their plans, whether they want him to be a point guard or a shooting guard or play a little bit of both, like, he played really well in summer league, and aside from those loyal to Jalen Green, there are going to be people that are calling for Reed Sheppard to be seeing more minutes if Jalen Green isn't playing well. I don't think that, you know, drafting Reed Sheppard is basically like the Grim Reaper for Jalen Green. Like, his time in Houston is done. He's got to go somewhere else, but he's got a shorter leash now. So like, if Jalen Green isn't playing well, it's not like, oh, we have to put in, I don't know who it was last year, whether it was Aaron Holiday at times or Amen Thompson. Obviously, it's another very talented young guy that they have. But now they have they're gonna have Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard, and Cam Whitmore coming off the bench that can play perimeter minutes. And it's like, oh, if Jalen Green isn't playing well, we have these other elite talents that we can turn to. So I'm not as optimistic that Jalen Green's gonna continue to get to work through things. So I do think it's a big year for him coming up. I'm not a huge believer in him just panning out the way that he has shown in spurts that he can be. I mean, it'd be fun to see because he is a fun player to watch when he's got it going. But what he's shown so far through his first three seasons is he can score, but he just can't score very efficiently or really provide a ton of other like value in a ton of other categories.
Yeah, I was really hoping to see his efficiency go up with Freddie VanVleet coming in. And it just didn't happen. I like Jalen Green. I still feel like he has all-star potential. Some guys get in this league and they figure it out and some guys don't. And I won't say that he hasn't figured it out because he's had some success, but the expectations of where he was drafted is that, you know, he's going to be a franchise changing player and he hasn't been that. So, you know, you mentioned some of the wing players, but you have Alperen Sengun, a young guy that has played very, very well. Tari Eason played very well, had injuries last year, so we didn't get to see a lot of him. But there are a ton of young, talented guys on that roster. And Ime Udoka, when it comes to defense, he doesn't play. When like that, you're going to play defense for him, or your minutes are going to be hurting. So that's something that may be where we see growth from Jalen Green this year, is that he comes in and he understands, okay, yeah, I can go out and get a bucket anytime that I want to. Maybe not efficiently, but I can go out and get one. I can create a shot. But if I'm not locked in on the defensive end of the floor, I'm not going to stay on the floor. And I think that Jalen Green, and this is obviously just speculation, but if you watch AAU basketball, they don't care about defense at all. Not even a little bit. It is go out there and get a bucket. And as a basketball lover, I hate going to those tournaments because of how bad the defense is. I'm like, how are you a coach? Like, if you would go, I swear to you, if you would go and teach a 1-3-1 zone and you would be disciplined as an AAU team, you would go out there and destroy these other teams. But nobody does it. Nobody. They're out of all the AAU basketball I've watched, there have been maybe a handful of good defensive teams. And good is probably stretching that a little bit. But I think that his mindset and what we're seeing at the NBA level is a product of the AAU ball that he played growing up. And things change when you're the best of the best in high school, then you step up to the next level and you're the best of the best of college. Then that step from college to the NBA level. And I know Green didn't go to college. He went to the G League route, but you know, you go from being the top 1% of high school. And then now you go and you're playing against other top 1% of players when you're playing at that level. And then you go to the pro level, and these are the top 1% of players in the entire world. The talent level is different, and you have to be able to adapt. And on the defensive end of the ball, at least, Jalen Green hasn't done that. And that is something he's going to have to do for the coach in order to stay on the floor. And in order for him to have real fantasy value, he's going to have to be on the floor and have opportunity.
Yeah, I love the point about AAU, and I think that could go into a much longer, much more in-depth conversation about how American players that are brought up playing AAU compared to international players that are growing up playing and like they're basically in their pro leagues and those development leagues, and just how people from basically every other country just learn how to play basketball correctly. Whereas in America, kids are learning how to do 10,000 dribble combos, shoot step backs, and not play defense, like, or pass, like you said. So I'm not saying that is like that's what Jalen Green is, but I'm just saying that's a fascinating conversation that could definitely take a lot of time to go into. But we will move on to our sleepers, and we'll try to quickly go through these just to keep this episode at around an hour. But I have three, so, and I, believe you have two, so we'll go 1-1 and we will just kind of go back and forth. My first one is Dyson Daniels, who got traded to the Hawks this summer. I don't think that Dyson Daniels' name should be a new one to dynasty managers. Obviously, he's a guy that we've kind of been waiting on for a while, but I think that this is going to be the year. Like, he's going to have a breakout season with the Hawks. He never was able to get a ton of minutes in New Orleans just because they have a lot of other talent. But now it's like, who's going to start over him in Atlanta? Like, I definitely think that Dyson Daniels is the starting shooting guard because they need perimeter defense with Trae Young, because from what I hear, he's not a great perimeter defender, but Dyson Daniels is a guy.
You've never watched him? You've never watched him?
I'm kidding. I'm a Hawks fan. It was a joke. No, so Dyson Daniels is going to be able to provide some defense, which I think the Hawks desperately need and have needed since Trae Young got there. But Trae Young is also a guy that can get Dyson Daniels some open looks, so he's not forced to play a ton of point guard. He can get some catch-and-shoot looks, but then also be a secondary ball handler for them. So I think it's a great situation for Dyson Daniels to kind of spread his wings and play through some mistakes maybe early on, but really kind of develop into the player that we were hoping he could be when he got drafted a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I like him a lot, and he was one of the guys that I had written down. But somebody else on that Hawks team that I like, and you only saw him in 20 games last year, AJ Griffin, I think, is a guy that coming out of the draft, he's 6'6", so I think that you can play him at the two. Whether he is going to be good enough to beat Dyson Daniels out, I don't know. And also with Trae Young on that team and the rest of the pieces that you have, that team should be fairly competitive. So, you know, like the young guys finding minutes, and they moved a lot of people there. And you still have, what, is Bogey still there? I can't remember everybody that got moved from Atlanta.
But AJ Griffin's actually in Houston now. They traded him for the second round pick that turned into Nikola Jurasic, I believe I'm saying that correctly.
I'm lost. I'm just going to bow out. I won't talk anymore. I didn't even like, I apologize. I'm unprepared. I didn't, But yeah, so I do. I like Dyson Daniels, and I like the fact that he's going to get an opportunity there. He was a good defender in New Orleans. And like you said, playing alongside Trae Young, you need somebody that is going to be a good defender. And I think that some players can swallow their ego and play alongside other stars. Some players cannot. I don't know that Trae Young is one of the players that can swallow his ego to play alongside star players, because if we're talking defense, DeJounte Murray is one of the best wing defenders in the league when he goes out there and he actually tries defensively. I remember an interview with him, and he was talking about how Kawhi Leonard told him when he was young, hey, if you want to get on the floor, go out there and defend. And so that, you know, you see those big steal numbers from DeJounte Murray because he is a good defender. And that just didn't work out. And maybe it's because DeJounte got used to playing with the ball in his hand. And listen, I don't watch enough Hawks basketball to tell you that, you know, hey, Trae Young is this or that. But the little bit that I do watch, you know, there was some stuff with John Collins where there was issues between those two. So I don't remember hearing anything about issues between Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, but I know that not everybody likes Trae Young. And so having a guy like Dyson Daniels that is not somebody that's a ball dominant guard that can play off of the ball, play good defense, that may be the type of piece that they need to play alongside him.
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely Trae Young has a polarizing personality, plays a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, which I think makes sense for a small guard that's been written off a good bit, but that obviously leads to issues at times, which I don't know a specific issue with DeJounte and Trae, but there was rumors of issues between them, and then there was the one documented somewhat disagreement between Trae Young and John Collins, and that's just what was reported, so there's probably more behind the scenes that never made it out to the public. So yeah, I do think Dyson Daniels will be a pretty good fit. Another guy I have right here is Marjon Beauchamp. We just really haven't been able to see him a ton, and I'm not optimistic that Doc Rivers is going to be forcing him some minutes, because when he took over last year, he's basically like, anybody under the age of 27, like, yeah, you're not seeing the floor tonight. Like, it was like a few weeks stretch where He literally didn't play any of the young guys. So I think that there will be more of a role for him. I think he was a very talented player early on in his career and like high school. And then he played internationally before coming to the NBA. But I think he still has a ton of talent. So he's a guy to, I'm hoping Doc Rivers is going to give a few more minutes to this upcoming season. But I think long-term, he's a guy that I don't want everybody to forget about. That's kind of my point with putting him on here.
You all can go ahead and forget about him, and I will get him cheap everywhere, and I'll just stash him. I actually just took him with my last pick in the that 30-team mock draft.
Nice.
Yeah, so I like him as well. I think that he has the capability of putting up defensive stats. And I told you that's something that, you know, I have a little bit more leniency on whenever it comes to the dynasty level, but that's something that I really pay attention to. And he's a guy because of that build, the long arms, you know, like quick. I think that it's going to be easy for him to find defensive stats. And if you have good defensive stats, Matisse Thybulle, D'Anthony Melton, like guys like that have value in dynasty leagues. Alex Caruso gets traded for players that are far superior to him, but because of his defensive stats, he brings that value. And having a specialist like that can really kind of push your team from being a borderline playoff team to, okay, now I can compete. So I really like Marjan Beauchamp. I'm with you. I hope that you see him get more minutes, because if you do, I think that you see those numbers go up. And, you know, it's that Bucks team is not as young as what they once were. And you need to get through the regular season healthy in order to win a championship. So why not lean on some of these guys that are, you know, 22, 23 years old, instead of playing all the old guys 40 minutes a night?
Yeah, I agree. Did you have one other guy, or was AJ Griffin your second sleeper?
Dude, like, that changes, because I didn't realize that he was in Houston, and with all of that wing depth there, it's going to be hard. Yeah. But this is a guy I had somebody else written down.
Yeah.
And I didn't dive into this a whole lot, because sleeper is very, I guess maybe I should have done him as underrated, because Jordan Poole is a guy that feel like he had an awful season last year. Like, he was absolutely terrible, but I believe with everything in me that he is better than what he was last year. and people are selling him so cheap right now. I saw a couple trades in my leagues involving him, and I'm like, dude, I wish I'd known he was on the market, because I would have been offering you something way better than what you just got, and overpaying apparently. But, you know, you look at the crappy stretch that he had, and he couldn't throw a rock in the ocean at one point last year. So I get having concerns and reservations about going out to get a guy like that. But we saw him be a really, really good player. And I know, or I'm confident at least, that he is better than he was last year. So he's a guy that I think is underrated. And I had him down here around the sleepers. But because of the name, I don't think that sleeper is necessarily the right term. But I think that you can go and get him for players that are not as good as him right now because of the season that he had last year.
These were very loose categories. It sounds like everybody sleep on Jordan Poole, and so I think that classifies as a sleeper. I think that's totally fine with me. He went 105 in our 30-team mock, dynasty mock. So, yeah, no, I agree. I think he should have gone earlier than that.
And I'll be honest, I nearly took him before that, but I did not take him because I wanted to see where he went.
So you were – so I think – because you would have had to take him in the third, because he went a few picks before it got back to you. So you would have taken him where you took Shaden Sharp.
Yeah. So I almost pulled the trigger on him there. I am higher on Shaden Sharp than I am on him. And so that's why I took Sharp. But I wouldn't have hated myself taking him right there, because I feel like that he can have that kind of value again. And so, like, that team is not – they're weird. Washington is the new Bulls. Like, what are they doing there? They move Denny, and then they sign JV. They sign Rashawn Holmes. And I know that's kind of protection for Sarr, because he doesn't want to play the five. But I won't dive into that. We're almost at the hour mark. So.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. The last sleeper that I have, because I think Jordan Poole is definitely a guy that people are too, like, a little too low on. Like, obviously, we need to be a little critical after the season he had, especially with the expectations everybody had going into last season. Anybody else get burned by drafting him in round freaking three of a redraft league, or is it just me? But the last guy I have is a guy that kind of burst onto the scene late last season, played really well last few weeks. Keon Ellis from Sacramento. You mentioned defensive stats earlier. That's a guy that'll get you some freaking defensive stats. He helped me in my home league survive to make the championship, but I had so many injuries that didn't really mean much. But he was getting so many steals and blocks for like this couple week stretch that it was like single-handedly winning the categories. I think he's a guy that it'll be interesting to see how Sacramento uses him in their rotations. I think he's probably their best perimeter defender. I don't think anybody else is quite to that level, but you have better offensive players in Malik Monk and Kevin Herter. But Keon Ellis did have a couple of pretty good summer league games on the offensive end. So if he's able to be consistent enough offensively where it evens out with how good he is defensively in comparison to everybody else, I think he's going to play a ton of minutes and be pretty valuable for the Kings moving forward.
The DeMar DeRozan, Jalen McDaniels moves don't concern you at all?
Jalen McDaniels, not at all. DeMar, I think, is just going to be it more of a small forward thing. I think it'll be a lineup of De'Aaron Fox, potentially Keon Ellis, potentially Malik Monk, potentially Kevin Herter. I don't know exactly who will start the two. DeMar, Keegan Murray, Devonta Sabonis. That's how I see the starting lineup playing out. And even if it's, say it's Kevin Herter starting at first because they want to get another perimeter shooter out there, and they like Malik Monk in a six-man role, I still think there's enough minutes for Keon Ellis as both a shooting guard and as a backup point guard, because there was a few games there where he was the guy that started when De'Aaron Fox was out, not Davion Mitchell, like a lot of people were wanting. Now, drafting Devin Carter throws a wrench in that, but if he's going to be out with the shoulder injury for the first few months of the season, I'm not worried about that early on. And then with how Kevin Herter played for most of the last season, I'm not too concerned about him. No. All right. So we are over an hour. Not that that's a bad thing. A lot of times I ramble on a lot longer than I intend to take. But we will go ahead and wrap the shooting guard episode. David, before I let you go, is there anywhere or any content you have coming up that we should be on the lookout for?
I really should probably do a little more dynasty stuff. I have, I don't even know how many pages of Excel spreadsheets where I have stuff laid out with my own, you know. There are a lot of bright minds out there. You mentioned Rhett Bauer. He's a great dude. He has fantastic dynasty content. Matt Lawson is another guy, and I could go on and name, you know, keep going and going and going, but if you want to consume dynasty content, there are guys out here that are super sharp. And I recommend don't just dive into one person, because everybody has different opinions and you can win in multiple ways. That's the one thing that I've realized in fantasy in general. There's no textbook. If you do it this way, you're going to win, because even if you're really, really good and you're paying attention and you're working the wire and you're making the moves that are needed to be made, you can still fall short because of injuries. Noah making it to the championship and then his roster's ravaged and he can't win. That stuff like that happens every single year. So I would love to do a little bit more dynasty content, but with just work and I have a 4-year-old and the OVC stuff, like the dynasty content is just going to be mine. I'm happy to come on and talk it, like Adam King had me on his show and we talked a little bit of dynasty stuff there. So I mean, you know, if anybody wants to have me on their show, I'm happy to talk about dynasty, but dynasty content, I'm not going to produce. The quadruple double podcast, I just sat down with the voice of UT Martin, Chris Brinkley. He's a good friend of mine. And we had a fantastic interview. Usually my episodes are about 30-ish minutes. I think Chris and I went around 45 or so. So that will be coming out probably tomorrow, and you can get that anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And the show, I do have a Twitter for the show where I'll be retweeting the OVC basketball stuff from the schools in the conference. So if you want to come and check that out, a school that you really should, I'm a little bit biased because I do the color commentary for UT Martin, but Jeremy Shulman is our new head coach, and he has a great relationship with overseas players. The majority of the UT Martin roster are players from overseas. So I'm really, really interested to see how those guys do. And also, you never know how those guys are going to translate. So you may see them start at UT Martin and then end up playing at a Power Five later on because yeah. they're just, you know, under-recruited over there. So there's a lot of talent in the OVC. It's going to be a fun year. Some of the big coaches left. Preston Spradlin from Morehead State left and went to James Madison. And so, you know, Morehead was – they ran that league the last 3 years. So OVC basketball is going to be fun. Come and find the show at Quad Double Pod on Twitter, and then I'm at NBA D-Will21.
Yeah, definitely. All the Dynasty Sickos, you just heard where to get some excellent in-depth information that nobody else is going to hear in the Dynasty space until we start talking about it more. Nobody else is looking into the OVC podcast. Like you mentioned, it's the only one that is doing OVC content, correct?
Yeah, there's not another OVC basketball podcast out. So, yep.
Yeah. If you want the information, it's right there. And your league mates, until they hear about the podcast, they're not gonna have the advantage that you're going to have. So definitely give David a follow. Check out his podcast. And we'll definitely have to have you back on to talk more Dynasty. This was a ton of fun.
Sure. I do want to mention one thing. It's OVC related. There is Southeast Missouri State just signed a kid. His name is PJ Farmer.
Okay.
And PJ Farmer is far better than OVC basketball. PJ Farmer went to Southeast Missouri State because that's where his parents went to school and they wanted him to go there. Mm-hmm. But that is a name to watch. I think he'll be coming in. He's a senior this year in high school, but that's a name to keep an eye out on. So that's going to be, I don't know that he'll go straight from SEMO into the NBA draft, but he's a kid that can jump out of the gym. He can handle the ball. He can shoot the ball. He's actually a really good defender. But that's just a name I wanted to mention on here because he's a guy, when he gets into the OVC, he's going to wreak havoc.
Yeah. So 2026 Dynasty rookie draft sleepers, PJ Farmer, we got him on the list. That's a league winner right there. So we got that excellent info well in advance. David, I'm just going to go ahead and say thank you so much for hopping on with me. As I said, we'll definitely have you back on. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast, and I will see you guys next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.